Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. In case you hadn't noticed, the world of beer has expanded exponentially in the past decade or so. Craft beer, small breweries, and home brewing have gone from the edges of popular culture to front and center. And while you used to have to go to a specialty retailer to find niche brews, that's no longer the case. Even convenience stores often carry craft brews. Beers brewed in small batches at off-the-beaten-path breweries, and the pathway into home brewing has gotten easier than ever. We're going to discuss beer for the rest of this hour, both brewing it commercially and at home, and just appreciating it. I'm joined in studio by Roger Phelps. He's the owner of 8 Foot Brewing, and he will be teaching a class on brewing and appreciating beer at the Alliance for the Arts in Fort Myers beginning this Thursday. Roger, thanks for coming in today.
Hey, Julie. It's an honor to be here.
And I'm also joined by Don Story, owner of Brew Story in Estero. It's a home brew supply store. Don, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And to round out our beer panel, we're joined by Adam Trummel. He's the home brewer who has been making his own beers for about 4 years now. Adam, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
And we'd like to hear from you. Have you gotten the homebrew bug, or maybe you just like interesting beers and have taken to exploring the many varieties now available just about everywhere? Join our conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So, Roger Phelps, let's start with you. Tell us about 8 Foot Brewing.
So 8 Foot Brewing is a culmination of many years of work that we've, my wife and I, have put in to kind of educating and spreading our love of beer. It's a brewery that we're hoping to put together in the next couple of months. So hopefully we'll have an opening date up here soon.
So it's currently a homebrew situation?
It's in the planning.
In the planning phases.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. But you already have a name.
We do.
What's with the name 8 Foot?
8 Foot. So, octopus. My wife loves octopi, and they
octopi.
Have 8 feet. So, 8 Foot Brewing is our kind of animal that we...
Oh, that's kind of cool. You're going to use like a little octopus for the logo and stuff?
Yeah. We have an octopus for the logo. We have a Facebook website, all that great stuff, and you can see our awesome artwork.
Now you just got to get the licensing and the beer.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. We've got the federal license. We are working on our state license, and we have lots of beer.
Well, that's for the testing and marketing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So when did you first get interested in brewing beer?
Well, do you want the long answer or the short answer?
Yeah, probably short. We only got about 18 minutes left.
So whenever someone asks me this at like a party or something, I will say, oh, well, you don't actually have to be 21 to buy the ingredients to make the beer.
Oh.
So that's the short answer. The long answer is, you know, I sat down in college. I started trying beers off of Beer Advocates. They have a top 100 list. And I'd start trying it and thinking about it, and I really enjoyed it, and it made me develop an appreciation for beer. And that led into brewing beer and trying more beer. So that sort of led me into this crazy world here.
So now it seems like people have a style, too, of beer that they like. Some people like super hoppy. Some people don't. Just kind of depends, and it's interesting. Do you have a certain kind that you prefer the most?
No. I actually don't really like to subjugate beer into styles. You know,
yeah.
there are different styles historically of beer. And in this class I'm teaching at the Alliance there, we will talk about those styles. But I appreciate, I'm kind of an unophile. I like anything that's good.
I like all things, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Don Story from Brew Story. How common is Roger's story? Just kind of getting into it and then picking it up and catching the bug and then wanting to make it into your homebrew, into maybe a business?
We have, 18 breweries in Southwest Florida now, and I think every single one of those people were home brewers to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been the norm from the very beginning. And in the beginning, most of those home brewers didn't know anything about business, so that a lot of them folded very quickly after opening. But that's not the case anymore. Most people do their homework, and like Roger and his wife have done, and mm-hmm. they're going to be very successful.
How long has Brew Story been around?
4 years.
4 years. So when you first started out, did you know that there would be enough people that could support a business like that?
I knew there would be based on my research, but there was only one brewery open at that time. And all the other brewers were customers of mine until they opened their breweries.
And then they go direct to the source.
Exactly.
But there's always another crop of home brewers.
Sure, yeah. It's always new people coming in all the time.
How many customers do you have kind of on the regular?
I have in my system, I have about 750 customers.
Wow. And how successful are all these people? Do people pick it up and stay with it, or do some people kind of want to try it once and then quit?
That's hard to gauge. I think most people that pick it up do continue with it. I think some people may get a little discouraged because you have to be a little anal to do this. It's I always equate it to baking versus cooking. When you bake, you have to be very precise.
Yes.
Everything has to be done a certain way. When you're cooking, you can be a little more of a freelancer. With making beer, you have to be very precise.
What happens if you're not precise? Can it blow up and mess up your whole closet?
Well, that can happen if you bottle your beer too soon. It can blow up. That's why you use a hydrometer to make sure that your beer is done fermenting.
That's kind of a science.
It's pure chemistry. But you don't have to be a chemist to make good beer. All you have to do is follow the directions.
Are there some people that have a gift for it that, you know, they take the chemistry, but they also have to have the art and the taste to make it happen?
That's probably true, but you can make very good beer without even understanding what you're doing. You can, as long as you, like I said, as long as you follow directions and you're consistent in what you do, take notes, do the same thing, you're going to make good beer. I've been brewing for 26 years, and I've never made a bad beer. Never been contaminated. It's just a matter of being, like I said before, anal.
And very precise, right? Yeah. So, Adam Tremel, you're a home brewer.
That's right.
Precise kind of guy?
I am very precise.
All about the precision.
Yep. And cleanliness and like Don says, following directions. It is very easy to make. Home brewing as a hobby is great. It can be as complex as you want to make it. You can dive deeper and deeper into it, into the chemistry of it. Or you can keep it simple.
Yeah. So what do? Do you keep it simple or do you dive deep?
I'm a complex guy. I keep getting deeper and deeper. In fact, I started milling my own grain. I just got a grain mill for Christmas, and I just milled my grain for my brew day tomorrow right before I came here.
That's pretty hardcore. You're milling your own grain. Is that, Don, do you have a lot of people that do that?
Not a lot, because I have a mill in the store, and I milled for them.
Oh, okay.
But there are people that have their own mill because they want to mill their grains. Depending on the type of grain, they want to mill at different thicknesses. So you can get pretty technical.
Pretty precise. It's almost like the different kinds of flour in your in your pie crust,
yep.
I guess, right? You know? Mm-hmm. So are you a beer drinker in general then, Adam?
I am now. I wasn't always. I got into homebrewing because my in-laws bought me a homebrewing kit. And from the first time I boiled up the mash and that smell wafted up, and I was like, oh, I have to do more of this. A gallon's not enough. So immediately I started building a bigger system. And now I'm a huge advocate for homebrewing and for beer in general. I got a part-time job over the summer working at Momentum Brewery down in Bonita. It's a great hobby, and I love it.
So I would assume that, like any new hobby, there's kind of mistakes that you make along the way. Did you make any mistakes?
A little bit, but, you know, I did my research, and I planned ahead, and I jumped in, but I didn't jump in too quickly. You know, after my first batch, I just kept researching, studying more, went to homebrew clubs, joined the homebrew club that Roger is also a part of. And just go and learn from everyone who's like Don, who's been brewing for 26 years, all the guys with all the experience, you know, learn that way.
It's pretty interesting. So we have a nice panel of experts here. So it's a great opportunity for people to call in and ask questions. And Kevin is calling in from Venice. He has one. Kevin, what would you like to ask?
Is it possible to brew a lambic at home?
That's a good question. Who wants to take that question? We have a hand up.
Well, one of the things I'm doing is specializing in wild and mixed fermentation beers. And so is it possible to brew a lambic at home? No. Yeah, I mean, lambic is a regional location. So you can't, you know, there's a lot of lambic producers that say, no, you cannot brew a lambic in America. And there are a lot of American breweries that brew lambic style beers, but they don't brew lambics because they are not in that specific. It's like, you know, champagne.
So champagne has to come from Champagne, France. Lambic
exactly.
has to come from lambic?
Exactly.
Yeah, is that a region?
It's not a region. No. There's a small area in Europe that is producing lambic, and that's where lambic producers come from. They have special microbes that they use. They ferment wildly. So when you are done producing the wort, it goes hot. You know, you boil the wort at the end of the cycle. It goes into what's called a cool ship, which is a large open fermentation vessel. They open, and they typically brew in the fall and the spring. And so they open their windows. They allow wild microbes from the region to come in and inoculate that beer. And it's regional. It's
kind of like a wild yeast fermentation in wine.
Exactly.
Situation.
Exactly.
And that's region specific.
Yeah.
But maybe I don't really know then. What is the difference between a lambic and any other kind of beer?
Well, obviously, I think the major difference is regional, but then you also go into the style subtleties. So, you know, lambic is going to have a certain acetic acid quality. It's going to have a certain sourness to it. It's going to have lots of other aspects that, you know, aroma, appearance that you would talk about when you're talking about beer.
But there are also sweet lambics.
Yeah, I've had a raspberry lambic a long time and a peach one.
It's a framboise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're I mean, for most people, they don't taste like typical beers. So people that aren't real beer drinkers, that's one way of getting them interested.
Which explains why I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a
sister the same way.
Drinker.
Yeah, that's all she'll drink. That's the only type of beer she'll drink is the framboise. And it just, again, it's in a certain part of Belgium where they've been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years. And other people do it all the time, but they were the ones that started it and they perfected it.
So, Don, do you think people can pull that off outside of that region? I mean, if a home brewer wanted to try to do something like that here, I mean, I know they won't have the native yeast
right,
that are flying around in the air in Belgium.
Sure, they can. They can. You could with beer, you can do anything you want. It's just that's what's so neat about beer nowadays. It used to be everything had to be controlled until people started learning about things like lambic beers, sour lambic beers. It can be done. You can do anything anywhere as long as you do your research.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Kevin?
Yes, it does. I certainly appreciate your time. Y'all have a great day.
All right. Thanks for calling in. And I wanted to ask another question. I read an article recently, and it was somebody kind of opining about how hops are over, like, I think it was something talking about craft brew is just ruining hops. It's just too much hops going around. People are getting overly crazy about the hops. I wanted to go around the horn here and ask your opinion on the use of hops, overuse of hops. What do you think? I'll start with you, Don.
No, you can't overuse hops. If you like it, you put as much hops as you want in there. If you don't like it, you put less hops in. It's just a matter of taste. Beer is very, very subjective. What you like and what you don't like is extremely subjective. A very good example is we had a class a year and a half ago, and we made a bourbon barrel vanilla porter. We were drinking the beer too early as far as I was concerned, but it was still very good. And one of the persons that were involved in it said to me, if I had one criticism of this beer, I would use less vanilla. And the fellow standing next to him says, there's vanilla in this? And these are very knowledgeable beer drinkers and makers. And one fellow couldn't even taste any vanilla. The other guy thought there was too much vanilla.
Yeah, it's a difference in everybody's palate always.
Exactly.
Person to person is different. Adam, what do you think about the use of hops?
Well, I think there's a hop craze in the United States with the IPAs recently in the past few years. I personally like hops. I like the bitterness of it, but I also like malty beers as well. It depends on the season. I'm a very seasonal beer drinker, you know.
How do you do that in Florida when we don't really have seasons so much?
I just go by the month, you know.
go by
I ignore
season.
The weather, but in the summer I like a light lager. In the winter I like heavier stouts.
Yeah.
So that's how I brew. That's how I drink beer. I like them all.
And Roger, what do you think? What's your feeling on the hop?
I concur with Don and Adam completely. Let me also add that hops are kind of they're a cool word to say. It seems like beer is not, oh, how hoppy is it? You know, how many hops are in there? Is it 120 IBUs? It's one part of many, many, many variables.
You realize you're speaking another language to me. What's 120 IBUs? What is that?
International Bitterness Unit. It's how we take a complex math equation. You know, it's a lot of science in brewing. and we figure out, based on the quantity of hops and their alpha acids, which is their measurement of bitterness, how bitter the beer is going to be based on how much time the hops are boiled in the beer.
Yeah.
So
I would find a hop in a haystack. I don't like the bitterness that much. So I would be like, oh, that's way off the chart. So I wanted to talk to you, Roger, a little bit about the class that you're going to be teaching at the Alliance for the Arts. It's called A Series of Beers, and its description says the course is to, quote, increase participants' appreciation for beer by providing experiences to enhance knowledge, exposure, and discernment of the various styles and traditions in brewing. That is quite a mouthful. Can you break that down?
Certainly, yes. I do make quite a mouthful when I write course information, because I try to be as informative as possible, and I'm hoping that's what this class will be. I talked a little bit about my experience becoming a brewer, and I sat down, I tried all kinds of beers, and I you know, that kind of led deeper and deeper down to the rabbit hole that Adam over here is talking about. And so I'm following that rabbit hole, and let me talk a little bit about my background. I have a master's degree in education. I was an educator before I decided to take the move and become a brewer. So part of what our mission at 8-Foot Brewing is education, community, and providing a resource for people. And so we decided to branch out and see if we could create classes, create partnerships, and the Alliance was fantastic in sitting down and helping come up with this and partner with us. So we're going to be going through, I was talking to Don earlier about this, you know, everything from the water it takes to brew a beer to the different ingredients, hops, yeast, grain, and we're going to be trying specific examples and talking about it and forming language to describe beer, because I think a lot of people, oh yeah, this is super bitter, but how else can you describe the beer? And I feel like that creates an appreciation for the beer, and you tend to grow and become more interested in it. And that's kind of how I started out. So
I wanted to ask, I'll ask Adam, how much does history play into your appreciation for beer? Because beer's been around since before everything, it seems like, you know?
Absolutely.
How much thrall does that place for you? I mean, does that interest you how beer has played such an important role throughout history?
Yeah, absolutely. For me personally, I've always been a history buff even before I was a fan of beer. So once I got into beer, thinking about the history of beer and I researched it, it was just – it's fascinating. A lot of people think that beer is one of the reasons that we have civilization, that early man settled down to grow grain to make beer, which I found fascinating.
Because it needs that level of organization.
Yeah,
you have to have that grain.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pick wild grapes and make wine.
Mostly they think probably beer started as an accident, that early man left grain out, it got wet, it fermented itself, they ate it or drank it, and they enjoyed the feeling of the alcohol that it created.
Mm-hmm.
And that they moved on to that and grew their own grains, figured out which ones were best for it. And it's fascinating.
So, Don, some of humanity's earliest known writings refer to the production and distribution of beer. The Code of Hammurabi was included. It included laws regulating beer and beer parlors. And the hymn to Nin Kasi, a prayer to the Mesopotamian goddess of beer, served as both a prayer and a method of remembering the recipe for beer in a culture with few literate people. How much does that type of history play into your daily brewing?
I talk about it all the time with customers. You know, the things like Louis Pasteur was not working on milk. He was working on beer when he came up with his vaccines. You know, that was something people did. They whitewashed that, literally, making it milk instead of beer. The reason the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock is because they ran out of beer. They were supposed to go to Virginia, but they ran out of beer, so they had nothing to drink that wouldn't make them sick. So they had to go make landfall and make their beer again. There's just so many things throughout history that beer was central to. Beer was around long before wine was, obviously because of what we're talking about here today is how it probably happened by happenstance. And then people settled down because they wanted to make beer instead of bread. In history books, they tell you people settled down, became from hunter-gatherers to settlers because they were growing wheat to make bread. It was barley to make beer, not wheat to make bread. So it's beer is very, very important. I mean, look at our own country. What happened when they didn't allow us to have beer. And then when they did allow us to have beer, they're not going to change those laws again.
Oh, you're talking about prohibition?
Yes.
Yeah. That was a dark period.
Yeah, very.
As I make light of history. But, you know, we are about to run out of time, but I do want to continue this conversation. Do you guys mind staying in the studio a little bit so we can keep chatting?
Sure.
Not at all.
And we'll go ahead and record this and put this on our website at wgcunews.org so we can extend this conversation because there's a whole lot more to learn about beer, I think. But in the meantime, I want to thank our guests for our show today. We have Roger Phelps. He's the owner of 8 Foot Brewing in Fort Myers. He'll be teaching a class on brewing and appreciating beer at the Alliance for the Arts in Fort Myers beginning this Thursday. Roger, thanks for your time. Also,
thank you, Julie.
Don Story is the owner of the home brew supply store called Brew Story in Estero. Thank you, Don, for coming in.
You're quite welcome.
And also home brewer Adam Trummel. Thanks for coming in today and sharing your passion.
That's
with
my
us.
Pleasure, Julie. Thank you.
I also want to thank my earlier guests, Florida CFO Jimmy Patronis and Brian Oglesby from the Better Business Bureau serving West Florida. Our show today was produced by Mike Kinnairy and yours truly. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM. NPR for Southwest Florida.
It's only 8 and 8 the pot and 1 and 6 in tax. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Hey, hope to be the number of the sun tomorrow king. And to his praise is we shall always sing. And up on his done for us, his will us up and cheer.
beer, beer, beer.